Okay. So feel free to start. Anyone got a question or want to share something? Feel free.
I wanted to share something.
Yeah.
Hello.
Okay.
Is Froms gonna go?
Yeah, carry on.
Okay. I had a dream many months ago that's really bothered me. When it bothered me, not in a bad way, but it's very different from any other dream I've ever had in that it was a dream within a dream. And from what my knowledge tells me about dreams that are within a dream, it's quite significant to your destiny. So I was sleeping. And I was instinctively aware that something had walked into the room. And I felt the person sit on the bed. I felt the bed go down. And then I felt like something warm came on my back. Like something warm came on my back. I felt like it was someone hugging me from behind, and that really made me uncomfortable. So I turned and punched the person, or punched the thing in my dream. Then I thought, as far as I knew, it seemed as if I woke up, and but obviously I hadn't woken up because the quote unquote dream continued, and I saw the wall in front of my bed became like a mirror, and I saw on the reflecting from the mirror on the other side of my room, three lions, sitting like they're on a throne or something, but on the other side of my room, and there were multiple beings in my room on that side. I think after that, then I woke up. I don't know. What do you get from that, Mike? Because that really, when I woke up, I was screaming and crying and saying, "Oh no, I punched the Lord! I punched the Lord!" That's actually what I was saying. So, because when I woke up, I just seemed to have known in my spirit that that warmth I felt on my back was actually a, well, I won't say anything. I'll just ask you what you think.
Well, in a sense, it's like it's more important what you think than what I think, because in a, I mean, I can give you a sort of interpretation of it, but the key in these things is, going back to God with it and building your relationship with God that enables you to hear His voice clearly when there's an encounter like that. Because in a sense, everything that we're looking to do is looking to engage in intimacy with God so that that intimacy can lead us and direct us and guide us into fulfilling our destiny. And the sort of order that God is wanting to establish with us is to enable us to access Him openly at all times so that we can be given the revelation we need in everything that we do. So I would encourage you in a sense. It's like, I mean, lions, thrones, you're talking about kingship and rulership, and that's really obvious in a sense from what it's saying. I think the key in it is, okay, there's a wall that's a mirror. So what did you see reflected? What is that? I mean, obviously we have the mirror of the word, and there are different things that you can equate to that, but it's like, what did you see in the mirror? The issue of the hug and your response to that, I think, is probably the key to this dream, because what came first was intimacy, which you were frightened of and you pushed off. What came second was rulership, which you obviously related to, but one doesn't come without the other. And so your response was, "Oh no, I've punched the Lord," whatever. And I think it would be to say, "Okay, why was there a struggle with intimacy? why did I, was it because the Lord came up behind me? Was it because, you know, there is something intrinsically I struggle with in terms of intimacy with God or whatever? It's that's really the area to look into and to see what was God trying to show you through that dream in that area of intimacy first. Because it's always intimacy that leads to responsibility. The relationship has to come first. And it's often the relationship which is the area which challenges most things within our soul. Because that's the area of damage. You know, that's where there will have been damage. That's where our souls would have had the most negative effects to intimacy or first love or relationship or any of those other things. That's ultimately where those things can be. So my encouragement would be, you know, that seek what is the significance of that for you personally, and obviously only you can sort of go to God with that, because you know there may be a particular incident that he might bring to your mind. There may well be a root issue that he was trying to unveil, because obviously you don't want to reject anything that God does in intimacy, but the fact that he comes up behind you is like you obviously didn't recognize his presence. Mm-hmm. If he stood in front of you and gave you a hug, you probably would have had no problem. So is that saying that God wants you to go deeper so that you're sensing his presence even when you can't see? So, you know, that would be my encouragement in it. You know, pursue, you know, looking into that era of intimacy. The rest of it, three lions, three thrones, well, that may be a call into heavenly government in terms of a bench of three, you know, that, but the key was the first encounter, because that's actually what you were then, oh no, you know, so, yeah.
Thank you. That really helps and answers a lot of questions as well.
Okay, no problem. Okay. Anyone else would like to ask something? Share something?
If no one else has any questions, can I ask a question about, I'm reading, well, let me just ask if anybody else has got a question first, because I don't want to.
Yeah, go on, carry on.
I'm reading Witness in the Stars at the moment,
yeah.
And really enjoying it, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that, Mike, and I've sort of got to about, I think, to the bit where it talks about the Southern Cross, and I'm interested because I've come through the route of reading C.S. Lewis's science fiction stuff, and he has a take on the solar system, which is hidden underneath his imaginative writing. So I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that. So, sorry, Regina's saying, I don't know if you can see her message.
Yeah.
Okay, right, sorry.
Don't know. I think there's different layers or levels of engagement with stars and star systems and solar system and all those things. There's the, you know, is the sense very clearly that in the beginning they were created as indicators of seasons and for government. And so there is an aspect there which they are set up for that. And there's also a sense where they are also out of sync with the frequency of heaven. So that, I know there's been a lot of teaching recently about untethering ourselves. You know, there's Jason Westerfield's prayers, Ian Clayton's done some prayers on untethering from the frequencies of those planets, solar system, and various stars that have an effect on us. But we are called to bring government into them. You know, there's the sense that the 12 Maseroth or the 12 star constellations tell the story of redemption. So you have the different star systems and their names, which reflect the story of redemption. Which I think you get that in various different books on those things. Obviously, it's been hijacked by the whole horoscope stuff and all those things. That puts it under a fate system, that we're under fate, that they were born under this star, so that's it, everything's mapped out. Well, obviously that just puts people under fear and bondage, so bring the gruel of God back into that. So although we need to be untethered from it, we also need to be to see what our responsibility is for it. I think there will be revelation release that will help us understand how Chancellor's houses in the realms of heaven and that are arranged around the sphere of God described it to me as the circle of the deep, presented by the constellations, that enables us to experience something of the spiritual realm. Because I believe that there's levels of what goes, things that goes on in those, so it's not just, well, they're the stars and they circle around, and they do. There's a natural thing where every 2,000 years a house rises in the constellation, rose. Your house of Aries was when Jesus was around, and then we have the house of Aquarius that rose up, 2,000 years later type of thing. Things. And they're not wrong in what they're teaching, because I believe, yes, there are cycles. I think that is just the limit by it, but to rule it and use those to bring change into the seasons and to bring governmental change. And, because that's literally what they're signifying, the change of government, the change of season. And if we're to have charge of the courts and to have access to stand in the assemblies of God, then we need to mature this earth back into its central place within the purposes of God. All the other things make no sense, because they were always intended to be ruled by effectively man, and Satan rebelled when he saw God's purposes for mankind in terms of the whole of the realms of the spirit and all the realms. That's really where we start. So our first responsibility is to be separated from anything that controls us in a negative way, and any frequency that affects us negatively and seeks to bring us under its dominion. And I think then we need to then focus on dealing with this planet. I know people want that there are realms and dimensions that we're supposed to govern, and there are galaxies and, how many, 400 billion galaxies or something. I mean, there's a lot of stars, and there's a lot of things out there. But let's focus on getting this planet sorted out, because without this planet brought back into order, we won't be able to do that. So I always want to try and bring it back to the practical, in that what does that mean for us now here? How do we begin to identify the seasons that we're engaging so that we can begin to bring government into those seasons and begin to see everything we need to do on Earth effectively deal with that? And I personally, I don't feel drawn to look into it right at this point. My main focus is engaging with the 12 Chancellor's houses. They do have a cycle and an order which needs to be aligned, so there needs to be an alignment of the 12 Chancellor's houses so that we come into a greater dimension of government. But there are so many mysteries hidden yet to be revealed, that we are not yet fully in having all that we will need to do, or everything that we will do. So let's actually use the things that we do have right now. Let's take charge of the court. Let's take charge of the house. Let's begin to legislate and administrate. Let's engage the Galactic Council with court cases to bring see the judgment of God released, to bring the right verdicts necessary, to bring justice, to bring mercy and grace. I think there's so much that we can begin to start getting on with, which I think is our primary responsibility. If the patterns within those constellations are reflective of any form of government that we need to establish, then that's great. And I know that, of course, you know, there are deeper levels of meaning in a lot of things. You know, when I've engaged some of the Chancellor's houses to see affairs of the nations and how the affairs of the nations works and things like that, I was amazed really to see, you know, that what we're doing now is just an infinitesimal part of what we will be doing in the ages to come. You know, and our levels of involvement in the ages to come as sons of God will be amazing in what we'll be called to do. But that is determined by whether we're faithful to do what we're called to do here. Because that's where our access into that in eternity will come from. You know, are we going to end up in the outer courts? Or are we going to be, you know, embracing our full destiny as sons and coming fully into who we are? You know, and so I think there's a challenge for people to embrace true destiny and in sonship right now and to leave the earthbound stuff behind. You know, there's so much that keeps us earthbound, and I also feel that some of the heavenly visions that have been released are expressions of our earthbound connection to the outer courts. And so they are visual images of people carrying earthboundness into the outer courts, and it's not really what it's designed to be like. You know, and I think it's misrepresenting what heaven's really like. You know, it's not a great gigantic playground. You know, it doesn't look like Earth, and it's not supposed to reflect Earth. It's the other way around. Earth is supposed to reflect heaven. And so much of what I've heard, and some of it is like, it's like, it just looks like Earth. It doesn't. And those visions are what people are, because they're connected in the outer courts to Earth. You know, and God doesn't recognize them according to their eternal destiny. That's what Jesus said. You know, well, we've cast out demons, we've prophesied, we've done this, we've done that in your name. And he said, well, apart from me, I don't know you. Well, he didn't know them in relation to they didn't look like the scroll that he'd written of their life. You know, so, you know, I can't really answer you specifically because I've not personally read that book. And I have the book. I have several books, you know, on my computer, all about the different stars and everything else, you know, from, you know, the sort of the mysteries in the stars and to, you know, there. I mean, I think I've got four books, I think, that are all written from that perspective. I just don't feel led to read them. It's like one of those things. It's like, I just don't feel led to read them. And I wonder, it's because I've been asked to explore the 12 Chancellor's houses and their relation, that I need to do that with a fresh sense of perspective without actually reading what other people have written about it, so that that won't influence what I'm actually seeing and experiencing. I don't know. I can't really say. I mean, what is your perspective, you know, in reading it?
Well, I mean, coming from the background of spiritual mapping, it's fascinating for me to read the way that the constellations have been interpreted. So taking the Southern Cross as an example, which has meaning for me because I came back home from Tasmania on a ship called the Southern Cross. So using that one as an example, it's talking about the cross of Jesus in the sky. I'm not sure I fully understood it, but coming from a mapping background, so I was thinking about the ceiling in Waltham Abbey Church, which is made up of zodiac, and then there's another book called The Gospel in the Stars, part of which I've read. But I'm actually, I mean, I'm interested in the universe, and I was wanting to understand that vision a bit more, and so, you know, I wasn't that I was looking for esoteric stuff, I was more looking for a reference in the material that lined up with what I'd sensed in the visions that I've had. So, and so that was one of the reasons that I started reading it. So it wasn't, it's not just for my satisfaction, it's more what's happening now, and this vision, these number of visions that I had were Jesus clarifying that for me. So I'm quite interested in what you're saying about how the chances houses affect Earth, really. So, and I totally agree with focusing on this planet first. We, you know, we need to gain experience and learn our skills and our understand the tasks that we have in terms of ruling before we can even go off planet, as it were, into the heavens. So I completely agree with that. So my interpretation of the book is, at the moment, I'm holding on that. I'm not trying to interpret it. I'm just trying to understand what the book is saying and what the other stuff is at the moment. So.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that some people may not be called to do some of those things now. You know, it depends on their sphere of government and what they're called to do. And you have to respond. I know where I am. You know, the key is to see a generation raised up who have the ability to, as sons of God, to see the restoration of all things, starting with what Adam and Eve were given first responsibility for, which is the garden, which is our own life to start with, you know, and then the planet, from the spheres of government that we need to see established. So that we can actually fully outwork that dominion mandate. And I know that's just the beginning. And there may be people who are operating in authority that is wider than that, and that's fine. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, for me, I've seen those things, and I'm aware of them. And I know that one day there's going to be, you know, a part that, as chancellors and, you know, in different realms of spiritual authority, that we will begin to legislate. But we have to, you know, we have to learn to begin to legislate our own life. You know, I think that's where most people are right now, legislating their own life to see the government of God come into their own life and come through their own life. And then begin, as friends of God in that relational connection with God, then begin to operate in lordship and kingship, you know, and sonship. You know, and I'm not saying what all that means, but I know that there are, you know, Zechariah 3, there is a process of maturity and coming into the maturity of sonship. And, you know, some of the things that are taking place, you know, I mean, I listened to something Jason Westerfield did, a couple of things that he's done recently, and was left somewhat frustrated in that there was no explanation, just a lot of things said, but just left hanging. Now, he may well have gone on to explain them in other sessions. It just felt somewhat cryptic and unsatisfying to me. So I was like, because, yeah, I'm aware that there are a lot of things that people say, there's things going on Mars and there are things on Venus. Now, you know, it's okay to say that, but give us some examples then. Tell us what it means or what you're saying. Is that a physical thing? Are you actually saying that there are physical things on the actual planet of Mars? Or are you talking about that Mars is a representation of a spiritual dimension that is represented by that? I mean, it's like the same thing of saying Satan's trophy room is under the earth. Well, we're not actually talking about a literal room dug out in in the earth somewhere. We're talking about a dimensional place that's represented by under the earth. Same thing of whether you're talking about Tartarus or other things. They're represented by being under the earth, but we're talking about dimensions here rather than physical things. I'm not saying there may be things under the earth. I know the aquifers are there and the deeps are there. There are things that are actually physically there, but I think there's a lot of stuff which is put out, which is really cryptic, that I think causes people confusion. And I understand that there's a degree of trying to expand people's understanding and expand people's perception, you know, absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, what we're doing now is only a small part of what we will be doing. But if we don't get that bit right, then we can be distracted from the main focus, you know. And, you know, we can be, I mean, people have used sort of so heavenly minded we're no earthly good. Well, I understand what they're saying, but we need to be so heavenly minded that we are earthly good. But actually, the focus is on bringing the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. So that then that gives us a base to go out from. So yes, will we colonize the universe, or will we bring the government of God to the universe? Will we be responsible for administrating galaxies? Highly likely, but we're not going to do that unless we learn how to govern our own life first, you know, and then to bring the government of heaven into that sphere. So although it's interesting, and although it shows that there's so much more to come, it doesn't actually do an awful lot for what I need to do today. You know, and I guess I'm a little bit more practical in wanting to see, well, what are we supposed to do today? How are we going to set up government on the Earth before we set up government on Alpha Centauri or any other planet? You know, because that seems at least where the Earth is out of sync, you know, to where it should be. Unless we're back in sync, the rest of it isn't going to come back in sync either, you know. So let's get this sorted first. But but I think I'm a lot less inquisitive than I used to be. You know, I wanted to know things, but I think that was my soul more than my spirit, because my spirit resonates and I know where to go and what to do, and I know that which interests me and that which just leaves me cold. You know, and you know, there was so much going on recently with this stuff being shared, and I thought, okay, I need to listen to it, because people were asking me questions about it. And having listened to it, I just felt, oh, okay, great, but it's not where I am at the minute, you know. And you know, I have already been untethered from a lot of things in my journey. So I'm sort of, that's not just not something that resonated with me, although I do fully understand that some people it would resonate with, because that's what God's doing with them, you know. So
can I ask you then about the Chancellor's houses and how they affect Earth, or are you not able to talk about that yet?
Well, I'm working on it at the moment, really. And you know, what I'm seeing is that there are 12 Chancellor's houses. They function in 4 sets of 3, and the alignment of those 3 then connects up with a 4th, which then cycles the next 3. And the agreement with 3 to form 4 opens a window for that manifestation on the Earth. But there's all about bringing them into alignment. But then it's not like they're just flat, they're dimensional. So it's very difficult to describe it, and I'm finding it quite difficult to be able to describe how things are aligned in 3 dimensions, if you like, which are not north, south, east, west, or that sort of dimension, but spiritual dimensions, to then in it. And I think, I guess some of the alignment would be, if you think about it in terms of cogs, if you have certain cogs that come around and then others connect at a different angle, and then that connects them as they all rotate, then they're beginning to form an alignment that releases from them that which will bring government. And so there are foundational alignments that need to be in place, which we really need to engage in first. Because, you know, I'd been in some of these houses, and but then God told me to go through in sequence and engage with the chancellors and engage with in sequence so that I could understand how that they work together to release government. And it's some of it is still inexpressible to me in a way that I can write it down, but my spirit has engaged it a lot. I've journaled all my encounters, and I'm beginning to then now receive revelation about how they begin to work together. But you know, it's key in everything we'll be doing now and the future. But you know, there's more to it than I can really explain right now. So I know I'm waffling a bit because I haven't got the words, you know, to be able to express it right now. But I will, and you know, because God's tasked me with doing it, so I'm working on it. But there's a lot more to come, you know, on it.
Yeah, I mean the cogs thing. Wow. I might that really resonates with me because for various reasons. So,
it ties in with sacred geometry and it ties in with governmental spheres, but they're not fixed. They do cycle, but we're responsible for bringing them into alignment to release that their government and to begin to take charge of the affairs of the nations and to begin to take charge of the culture of the nation and to begin to change it. You know, this will be what we're called to do, is to establish that, and then the release, the resources from the treasury room. I'm not talking about finance. I think a lot of people focus on Melchizedek as just purely finance, and it's so much more than that in terms of God's resource to do what we're doing. And we haven't sort of started on the 12 laws of Zion, you know, because those are linked to actually being able to function according to the government of God. Because going back to Zechariah 3, we have to administer the principles of the kingdom in lordship. You know, we have to take charge of the house. We have to take charge of the courts. You know, and that's actually what this governmental issue is, and ultimately we must have access to stand in the assemblies of God, in the higher courts of God. But we're not going to do that unless we get move from stewardship to friendship, to lordship, to kingship, to sonship. You know, we have to mature. We need the seven spirits of God to help us mature. We need wisdom to help us in terms of how we bring government. We have to get our mountains. We have to start governing our governmental spheres on those mountains. It's just there are principles behind that which will enable us to more effectively do that. And many of the courts of heaven are waiting for us to mature to a point where we can take our place and take charge of them. You know, the angelic beings that are in charge of those courts are there because we've not yet matured. You know, they're not there because that's their eternal task. They're there because they're waiting for us to take our places. You know, so first, let's get our own mountain and let's know who we are in governmental authority. Let's establish the government on our seven mountains so that we can bring heaven to earth around our lives. Then we can start to think about establishing cities of refuge. You know, I think a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon of, oh, let's set up a bench of three. And, oh, yeah, we'll set up benches of authority. And they're not even on their own mountain. You know, they've just heard a phrase or, you know, they've sort of jumped onto the latest thing. And they're talking about the right terms, but, you know, they're not there in their own life yet. You know, so I think it's a matter of progression, of growth and maturity into authority. You know, and I have to administer that in my own life. know, and yeah, God is going to release the blueprints out of some of those houses that will bring cities of refuge into being and will establish the government of those cities of refuge, but they will be based on the precepts, statutes, and laws of God, not on some things that we want to do. You know, they will come out of what was. You know, there will be a reinstigation of God's original purpose. You know, and our part to play in that. You know, so yeah.
Thank you very much. That's really helpful. I've watched that several times, I think.
Yeah. Mike, I just wonder if you could explain a bit more about the process of the mountains and establishing the mountains you were just describing then. It's a terminology I hear a lot, and I'm not that sure about it. Is it something which is visual that you see? I've had encounters where I've sort of become almost like an eagle or something flying up, circling this large physical mountain.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, moving to places where I know certain things I can legislate for and I'm responsible for in my geographical area. Yeah. But I'd just like to hear a bit more about the mountains and what you're saying there and just sort of help me unpack the language and sort of try and understand the framework.
Sure, okay.
Sorry, my connection is really bad today. I don't know why, so I hope that was okay.
Yeah, sure, yeah, I heard that. Yes, fine, yeah. I mean, when it comes to some of the understanding of mountains, the first thing to sort of recognize is that our spirit is a mountain, that we are a mountain, that we are a symbol of government, a position of government, and God has assigned us with a governmental position. Now, that has to be outworked in our own life. We, therefore, when we're talking about the mountain in the realm of the kingdom of God, we're talking about our position of government in that realm. Now, you have sort of biblically many things where mountains are talked about as places of authority, not least the mountain of the house of the Lord being raised up above all the other mountains so that all the mountains will stream to it. And that, in a sense, is what God is wanting to do right now in terms of raising up his mountain on the earth so that we can there bring heaven to earth in governmental authority. And you know, you have the mountain in Daniel, and you have various descriptions of the mountain and the stone, you know, without being cut from the mountain and that becoming a kingdom that fills the earth, and you know, which, you know, is what we're part of. But in the realm of heaven and in the realm of, you know, the government of God is on Mount Zion. So heaven itself and the realm of heaven itself is completely patterned after a mountain. Now, we're not talking about Mount Everest or, you know, I guess what we have in our country are pretty small mountains, aren't they? We haven't got an awful lot of huge mountains. But we're talking about something which is very difficult to describe in terms of size. And you're talking about all the courts and the rooms and the garden of God and the waterfalls of God and the river of life and all those things are all part of that mountain, and they can be engaged on that mountain. Most people just don't see it as a mountain because they just focus in on the bit that they're seeing, whether they're in a court or they're in a particular room or in the tabernacle or the throne room. But the whole thing is really Mount Zion. We can touch it, it says in Hebrews. We can come to Mount Zion, which is, you know, the city of God, effectively, in the realms of heaven. But everything is patterned after that. So each realm of heaven has mountain ranges in it, which are reflections of the government of God in that sphere. So within the realm of the kingdom of heaven, there are mountains ranges, which are higher levels of mountain ranges than are in the level of the kingdom of God. And there are, even in that realm, if you think of, you know, our position of government in that realm being as symbolic as a mountain, then there are seven spheres of government attached to our life, which are seven mountains beneath that mountain in level. And when I first started to engage this, you know, I was just shown the mountains in vision, taken there, shown our church. What's, you know, I didn't really understand anything about personal mountains or anything. I was just shown these mountains, which representing our spheres of government as a church. And that's how I saw them. I saw what was on them. And we've sought to engage those mountains ever since to establish government on them. And we're now in a place where we have benches on each of the mountains, and we're now administering that as a church. Yeah, but then everything is a fractal of something else. So that is just made up of me as one of the living stones of that mountain, effectively. So I'm just part of that government individually that makes up the whole. People can get caught up with the, well, is it an actual mountain? Well, we're talking about the realms of heaven here. So, you know, it is, but it's not physical as in our physical mountains are, but it is still a realm of heaven, which is a sphere of government, which is a mountain. That's how God chose to make it. That's how he's describing it. That's how I see it. I go on to my mountain. I have a throne on my mountain. I go on to our church mountain. We have three thrones on that mountain. We have seven other mountains which have thrones on them. So there, it's using it as the symbol of government, but a high level of government. Now, in my own life, I struggled initially because I tried to be on all the mountains. You know, how do I get on this? I need to be on this mountain today. I need to be on that mountain today. So it's like spinning plates, trying to jump from one mountain to another, until actually the revelation that I am a mountain, my position of authority in the realms of heaven is represented by that mountain. Therefore, I can rule all my mountains from there, because it's who I am. I am a mountain. I am the government of God in my sphere. So it's exercising that authority, which is the important thing, and then my spirit will direct, you know, what I need to do at any point in time to administer all the spheres of government that I have. Now, I don't have to now think about that cognitively too much, because I'm aware, I've done the work of understanding what I'm called to do, and now my spirit begins to just lead. So sometimes I will declare some things for my mountain which will affect my family. Sometimes I will declare some things for my mountain which will be more ministry orientated into some of the things I'm called to do around the world, but I allow my spirit each day to direct what I do in authority, and I do that from a position of being mandated to do it, because I get a mandate from God, and my destiny, my scroll will unveil that and turn the desires of my heart towards what I'm supposed to be doing today. Because, of course, I'm only responsible for what I'm supposed to do today, not tomorrow or the next day, but today. Because today is the day where I've got the resource to do that. I haven't got the resource yet for tomorrow, because tomorrow's not here yet, in one sense. But I have got fresh mercy for today, and today I can actually do whatever I'm called to do and be fully in faith that all that I need to enable me to do that will be available to me today. Whether that be a legion of angels, whether that will be a insight revelation, whether it will be anything I need to get out of relationship, that mandate. So I can do what Jesus did, only did what he saw the Father doing. So I want to see what the Father's doing today so I can do what the Father's doing. And I can then respond and be obedient to that in my own life. But it is a spiritual activity in that my spirit will lead.
So is it, you talked about your church being a mountain, and obviously that's an entity separate from a person or a spiritual created being. Are there mountains there which can be I live in London, and I'm thinking of London, and I engage with London, and I have done that in a tangible way. Would that experience I do where I feel comfortable legislating over certain issues and things within London, would that be a description of a mountain, even? Is that...
Yeah. Well, I mean, in its basic form, a mountain is a sphere of government.
Okay. So if I can try and make it as practical as I can. So, for example, I've been thinking about, you know, what's been happening with ISIS in the Middle East. I'm thinking, well, I have responsibility in London. I have responsibility, therefore, over a financial area, which comes under that. So, therefore, I've been felt to legislate about money issues to do with money going back to the Middle East to fund that. And so that's a practical example of exercising authority on a mountain, which is what we're talking about. Is that right? Is that?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And it will be according to the sphere of government that you have. And people have different levels or spheres of government. You know, not everyone is called to administer a city or a region or a nation. But we are all called to administer our own life. And within our own life, there will be our family, our work, church, whatever, the aspects of government that we have there to administrate. So literally, our church has a blueprint. That is what authorizes us to operate, a heavenly blueprint for what our church looks like. That blueprint has on it the fact that we have a bench of three which reflects the government of God, who are operating on the mountain of authority that blueprint represents, and therefore we have seven mountains that are associated with that blueprint that are specific areas of government that we've been given. You know, and our seven mountains are good news, health, freedom, blessing, harmony, media, and enterprise. Now, you know, those are spheres. Now, most people wouldn't understand what those meant, but we do, because there are spheres of government, and each of those mountains will have seven other mountains. So within our health sphere, we will have seven governmental spheres that we can administer in our health mountain. You know, in our media mountain, we will have seven. So everything operates on the same pattern as heaven. You know, bench of three, Father, Son, and Spirit, seven spirits of God, four living creatures. They represent the basic functions of government, and throw in there 12 elders, you know, in terms of, you know, a higher level of government. So depending on what you're called to will depend on what level of government you administer. So for instance, your own life could have a financial mountain that gives you authority to administer finances, and that could be over a region. You may have, within your destiny, the authority to administer things over this area of London. Now, you may be functioning at this point on the financial mountain that's associated with the blueprint for London. You know, so, and there may well be a higher mountain, if you like, which represents the blueprint that has seven mountains, and one of them is financial. You may be on that one. You know, it's like you may be on the highest. Some of it is, some people are now recognizing that their destiny and what they've been drawn to is now being unveiled, to see that this is governmental and this has a heavenly aspect to it that now is being revealed in Revelation. And that makes people more effective, because when you operate above something, you can administrate it from above. Most of the ministry that took place in terms of all our spiritual mapping and other things we did in understanding what was going on in the earth as a result of those things that were operating in the atmosphere of the earth did not have the revelation to go above into the realm of heaven and therefore administer from there. They operated beneath, and therefore there was limited success in what was going on. But in reality, we have to operate in a higher level of authority, otherwise we're underneath it. So we have to go into the realms of heaven. Now, there will be, within the realm of heaven, a mountain that establishes what the blueprint is for London. But within London, there may well be, I don't know, how many everlasting doors that are associated with cities of refuge or different things that were within that sphere, and many people will have their own spheres within that to operate in. You know, I do believe that God is going to establish in the southeast and the southwest and the northeast and the northwest government that will be for England, and therefore people need to operate in the levels of authority where they are, and God will then recognize that to establish a bench of three and an angel of the house for the whole of England, coming out of those that embrace their government in those regional spheres. So I've seen this, I've seen the pattern, I've seen the whole thing, you know, and some of what I feel called to do is to release the sound that calls government to come into place at all levels. You know, and some people right now don't necessarily understand the positions that they've been given from a heavenly perspective, but they have been called to those places and they're starting to respond. But, you know, it's an ongoing journey of revelation for us to embrace our destiny and the fullness of it.
Thank you. It's very helpful.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anyone else want to ask them anything?
Do you have time, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yesterday night I listened to one of the hangouts about the Galactic Council you were talking about. There's some ladies about it. Could you roughly kind of describe how I would bring a court case to that council so that I kind of understand? It somehow touched my heart very much, and
okay.
Mike, I just didn't hear what Regina was asking, something about the council.
Yeah, she's asking about the Galactic Council and how you present a court case. In a sense, I'm sort of a little bit reticent in going into it in great detail because I know that it follows the same basic precepts that you use in any court. So in the mobile court where we deal with accusations, we present a case. So we hear the accusations, we then stand under the judgment of God in those accusations, and based on the nature of God, who is judge, and his righteousness, he finds us not guilty. So the judgment is made on our behalf as a result of God, who is the righteous judge, and on the basis of the cross, which allows righteous judgment to be administered, because now we can be forgiven, and we are now made the righteous of God in him. So there's a whole process that goes on there that gives authorization for us to act, whether it's to separate us from a particular mindset, belief system, value system, behavior patterns in our own life. We receive a verdict, and then we apply that verdict, and we then enforce that verdict in government. And so the basic patterns are the same as that. You're just dealing with a much higher level of authority who are responsible for the planet and for the affairs of the nations on the planet and for the culture of the planet and beyond. Thinking about it as a galactic council. But again, I go back to what I said earlier. It's not, unless you are mandated to go before that galactic council with an authorization for something specific, and I'm not saying you can't go there for, you know, a nation or a region or a city, I think you can, but you have to be clear what you're mandated to do. I don't think people can just wander up to the Galactic Council and think, well, okay, I'm just going to go to the Galactic Council and fix something today. You know, the Galactic Council sat on Saturday, and they're now in 70 days of judgment. That's what they're administering, judgment. So in those 70 days, you would need to put a court case together based on the precepts of God, who he is, based on evidence, and based on purpose. So you need to understand what was, what is, and what will be, because that's what you're going to administer. On the basis of who God is, on the basis of what is happening now, and what will need to happen to bring now back into alignment with God's purposes. So the Galactic Council can do things like setting boundaries and limits on what can happen on the Earth. Hence, that's why we've not been blown up in World War III, because there are limits set on what the enemy can do. But the enemy does have legal rights, so you have to deal with the legal rights. Then you can begin to receive the declarations and the authorization to begin to administer from the verdict that has been released. Now, it's really, really important that we understand the nature of judgment. The judgments made are verdicts passed on behalf of. They're not so that punishment can be poured out on the earth. Punishment has already been dealt with on the cross. This is to do with getting God's righteous judgments that gives us the verdict that says we are now authorized to administer this city of refuge or this city or this nation, depending on our level of government. But you need to put together a pretty strong case to go before the Galactic Council. And again, this is something that's been bandied around quite a lot recently, as if people can just walk up there. If you've never been in a mobile court, if you've never dealt with the Court of Chancellors, if you've never produced legislation in the Court of Kings, you're unlikely to be able to go before the Galactic Council. So, A, do I have a mandate to go? Personally, yes, I do, because I've been given one. So I'm working on a court case for releasing judgment to bring change and transformation. Now, I am working on that on the basis of the very nature and character and precepts of God that is what I base everything on, so that what I'm seeking for will come out of who God is in what was, if you like. I now also need to put together a case for this verdict to be made. And that actually is a case for me that brings this verdict to change a situation. So I have, this is the right that will release this judgment. Then I then have, and the purpose for this judgment and the verdict to be passed is for this, which is in alignment with God's will and purpose. So you put together a court case around that. So it follows the same patterns that you would use in some of the other courts. It's just a totally different dynamic. You know, in the next 70 days after this, then you have justice. So what do we want to see justice come into? Then you have mercy. Then you have grace. You just can't go to the Galactic Council and say, well, I love mercy to be poured out over my region. On the basis of what? Okay, A, yes, God is a merciful God, that he desires mercy, that fresh mercy can be released every day. Why does mercy need to be released? Because there are this, 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 and this that needs this. On the basis of what? What has been prophesied? Why have you got the right to have to see mercy in your area? Well, because there's an ancient well there, because there has been prophesied this there, that there's been prophesied that there, that God has spoken this in the past, that his purposes are for this, to establish a city of refuge. Whatever it might be, you have to know God's purposes so that you can use the verdict to then bring the declarations that begin to administrate it. I mean, all this stuff sounds pretty way out and weird compared to what we've been used to doing in church. But then what we were used to doing in church was the old order and under rather than above. now we need to be operating as a royal priesthood of the order of Melchizedek in the realms where our high priest, after the order of Melchizedek, Jesus, has gone to make a way as a forerunner for us to go and to begin to administrate. But again, you know, if unless you can get a clear mandate for your day, then you're not going to receive a mandate for going before the Galactic Council or going to establish legislation in the Court of Kings or whatever it might be. And so if you're operating in lordship, you will be under the mandates of the king. And I don't think anybody who's just operating in lordship right now is going to be able to access the Galactic Council. You have to be operating in kingship at the very least. That gives you access to the legislation of the Court of Kings, to various other courts, chancellors, scribes, various other courts. So faithfulness, following through the process, embracing lordship, and fully operating in that will bring a reward, if you like, of now God can entrust us with kingship, and in kingship then we begin to legislate in a different way. You see, lords don't have the right to make laws, kings do. Lords operate under the laws of the king. But when you're operating as a king, you have the right to establish legislation that then lords operate under. And that's how it works. So it's, you know, following Zechariah 3 process through, and it's only God who can invest us with those or that level of authority. It's not something we can do just by our imagination. He has to invest us and give us the symbols that represent that authority. The symbol of kingship is an orb, you know, and that orb gives us the right to make legislation. The symbol of lordship is a scepter. Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So we have to become the lords under his authority, and he's the King of Kings, so we also become a king under his authority. So there's a whole process in it of maturing. Yeah, and you know, my encouragement is to, for everyone, is to focus on being a lord in your own life and taking charge of your own house. And if you're in level of government within a church setting, to establish that under the government of God, you know, and to operate under a bench of three and to operate on the mountains of the church, you know, progress. You know, I think some people just want to go and do things because they hear other people talking about them. If your heart's desire and if your spirit draws you towards it, cultivate that desire, because that desire will lead you into it and will set you on the journey of then being willing to pay the cost to do it. And there's a cost that comes with these things. The cost is being a living sacrifice, being willing to be transformed, being willing for our genetics to be changed. You know, it's a process of what happens when we surrender and we yield to transformation and transfiguration is that God can entrust us with more. But you have to be willing to pay the cost, and you won't be willing to pay the cost until the desire of your heart will draw you to that, whatever the cost. You know, and that will come from meditating and developing that desire. You know, if you have a desire for Germany, to see Germany under the government of God, and to see, you know, regional government set up and benches of three set up in regional government, and to see, you know, national bench set up, then you have to start somewhere. You know, that may be the desire, but what will it take to see people come to that place of maturity? Then you have a strategy for how that might take place in your own life, but also in the lives of others. Someone will have a blueprint. You know, and I'm not talking about here, of course, you know, having some earthly recognition of government I'm talking about heavenly government. It's what you're recognized in heaven. Some people will never know what you do in the realms of heaven, because we're not looking for it from a position of people to know what we do. We're looking for it to release people to know God and to fulfill their destinies. You know? So it's heavenly government that we're looking at, and that is better done there than in the public eye, to be honest. You know, because you can do an awful lot of things there, hidden, protected from public gaze, which is a good place to start.
Thank you so much. That was excellent. Very helpful. Yeah, very good. Thank you.
All right. Okay, well, we'll leave it there.